Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It's Carl, and with me today, I've got the founder of CSS Tricks, the founder of CodePen, and a man who is selling out workshops all over Dayton, Ohio. It's Mr. Chris Coyer. How's it going, Chris?
Thanks. I believe it was sold out. Yeah, it's so good, Carl. Thanks for having me.
I did my fact checking.
Yeah.
I got with Rob. I was like, he sold that out, right? Because that photo looked pretty sold out.
Yep. I just got to chat with our buddies, Rob and Ben over there in Dayton, Ohio at Sparkbox. So I have kind of a longstanding relationship with them. In fact, they did a bunch of CodePen work. They did the last time we did like a big old redesign of CodePen. A lot of that work was done by Sparkbox. And so when I was there, it wasn't it. Like these workshops are like kind of Sparkbox. But it's kind of like a spin-off thing they do.
Yeah. Well, they were really excited to work with you on that project, by the way. Like Rob was pretty excited. So I was, you know, he's a good friend and I was happy for him. But so I want to dive in. And for people listening, get a little bit of a backstory on you. So like when we first met, I think you were at WooFoo.
I'm sure.
And yeah. You were a designer, right? Isn't that how you kind of got your start?
Yeah, which was a title that I like. You know, I like it when people call me a designer because I want to be a designer. It feels very fancy and I feel, I don't know, it's like someone who I want to be. And I am one. And in fact, I do design work almost every day to some degree. But I'm not how you, I don't know how some people think of it. I certainly like don't design the experience of what it's like to walk into Lambeau Field or whatever, or even much like very detailed web design work with fancy gradients and rounded corners and stuff. I do some of that work, but generally it's, I don't know, kind of UX work and like, what is it like to use this product work? So when they hired me at WooFoo, yeah, it was a designer only because I didn't know back end work so much. So it was a lot of like front end development and blogging and customer interaction stuff and whatever. And they just kind of called me a designer and I was happy to take it.
Well, and I think at that time, that was kind of what the title was, right? There weren't really front end devs. That wasn't really a thing at the time, I don't think.
I think you're right. As a matter of fact, the reason I got the job at WooFoo is because I was invited to speak at a conference called the Front End Design Conference, which was a weird name for a conference at the time. Like it wasn't like that name hadn't solidified itself as a thing. So it kind of got away with doing it. I don't think somebody could get away with calling a conference that anew these days. Maybe they could, but it'd be a little, now it seems like almost too vague or something. Anyway, so yeah, and then Kevin Hale, who worked there, was also speaking at that conference, and that was our chance to like meet for the first time. And I was already a kind of a fanboy of him, and my fanboyness parlayed itself into a job there.
Well, and I think the first time we met, it had to be at a conference because we were both speaking all
probably
the time.
Shortly after that, yeah.
And I told somebody the other day the story where we were at. What was it? It was Future of Web, but it was whatever their big one was, Future Insights.
Yeah. And maybe Vegas? Were we in Vegas?
It was Vegas, yeah. And we were walking down the hallway, and I was like, man, I've got to give two different talks, brand new talks, and I was kind of wigging out a little bit. And you were like, why? And I was like, well, it said in the contract that I have to give different talks. I can't give the same talk. And you were like, fuck that. I'm giving the same talk. And I was just like, wait, we can do that? you saved my life that day because I was convinced I always had to give a different talk every time.
Yeah. No, you don't have to do that.
No, and now I don't speak at all unless it's an event that I happen to be putting on and somebody backs out. So
really, you had a change of heart or just a, I don't know, change of life in some degree.
Yeah, a change of life really because, I mean, now I run an organization that has about 14 events a year. So
this podcast is an arm of this, right?
Yeah. And if I were to, if I were to go to other events as well, like my kids would not visit me in the old folks home. It just would not happen. So, I want to transition a little bit. I want to understand. So, were you running CSS Tricks while you were at WooFoo, or how did CSS Tricks come about?
I was, in fact, part of the interview even at WooFoo was, hey, you know, we like you and stuff, but what would it look like to work here? Do you have enough time to work here? Like, you know what I mean? Like, can you work for us during the day and do CSS Tricks at night? Like, kind of. Like, I know life never works out that cleanly, but, you know, if you're going to work here and we're going to give you a full-time salary, you owe us a full-time work, essentially. Like, I don't remember how it was worded, but they were clear that they expected a full-time, you know, worth of work out of me, and if I want to do CSS Tricks, that's fine. But and at the time, it wasn't even that. But I had also just I was wrapping up writing a book, and I told them, like, hey, why don't we wait a few more weeks before I start, because that's yet another thing that would be chipping away at my time. So why don't we wait to get that totally done and out before I start working there, which they were cool with, and that was fair. But yeah, I thought it was a fair question that I would ask anybody of it. If I was about to hire somebody these days who I knew was super involved in open source somewhere or was halfway through writing a book or something, I'd be like, you know, what's the priority situation there? Like, you know, you can't... I don't know. It's tough because I think there's even some laws involved, right? You can't be like, hey, you married? How old are you? You know, like there's questions you can't ask. But asking one that's like, I can tell you're very committed elsewhere, seems like a legit thing to ask.
And I think you shared this with me or somebody else I was speaking with. But originally, you were just helping people via email with CSS. And then you decided, hey, you know what? I should capture this and put it out there because I'm running out of time. And I could just point people to these solutions again and again. And was that kind of the origin of CSS Tricks?
Not quite, actually. I think that is a part of the story, but that version of that story was more like later on in CSS Tricks' history, in which people were listening to what I had to say a little bit and would email in with CSS questions, which is great because that, you know, when you have a blog about any topic and people are emailing you in questions, that's fodder for, you know, the best questions are great blog posts usually. And so then I would be like, okay, I might answer it. I might turn it into a blog post, but I'm also going to throw a forums up on the site so you can all talk to each other. And when you're the home, you know, theoretically there's some value in being the owner of a place where people are talking to each other, you know?
Well, and that's actually my ulterior. I always get that wrong. My ulterior motive.
Well, I know. Is it the UL or AL? Ulterior? I don't know.
But so I run a community now, 1,000 digital agencies plus like 4,000 digital professionals. And I'm in over my head. And mm-hmm. I know that CSS Tricks, and also I would imagine Shop Talk, your podcast with Dave, was kind of helped form a community. I know when Gene and I were actually able to be sober at the same time, and do BizCraft, we started having a community that was forming around that. So did all of these things come together and you start to see some of the same people across the different channels?
To some degree, I think there's some cross-pollination of community, especially because mine are those three things, which is CSS Tricks, which is largely just, in a sense, it's like a magazine and you can read it and it's a bit of an encyclopedia. So it's kind of like, yeah, there's community there.
I probably should have looked at it before we had the call.
No, it's cool. It's CSS Tricks is the oldest of those things. Over 10 years old now, and it's me just blogging. It's a blog. There are forums there. The forums are generally healthy, and that's probably the thing. You know, most people think of an online community, they think of something like forums. It's people with accounts. It's people typing paragraphs to each other. That's there, and there's some community there for sure, but it's just not like a thriving metropolis of community. It's largely just like, hey, I'm having a problem. Hey, could you help us fix it? Yeah, here's a couple of pointers kind of thing. It's, you know, it is what it is. CodePen is much more of a community in that it has that people talking to each other, but it has like, I'm very proud of what my made. I follow you. You follow me are like actual components of the website. That's literally the thing you can do. People get together in our name in real life and talk to each other. CodePen yeah. makes its way into other social platforms. There's, you know, people talking about it, CodePen and the things that they build and front end stuff and making friendships on other social platforms, even though they're kind of, they think of themselves as CodePen friends. So
when you made that decision that you were going to do CodePen, like, how did you decide to launch it? Like, what was the moment for you where you were like, I've got to do this?
Sure. I mean, that stuff is so muddy in a way, and that it actually started out as a, you know, not particularly like just a tech project, just almost a weekender. And so it was, you know, at WooFoo, I made two friends. I mean, I'm friends with literally everybody that worked at WooFoo. Is that like cool of a company? I think that everybody was just such great people. But I was really good friends with Tim Sabbat, Alex Vasquez. And then when WooFoo sold, we all went to SurveyMonkey together. I worked with them there too. We were even better friends there. And we were all ready to, like, you know, like, it was one of these tricky things where, like, as great of a, and it still is to this day, it's a great company. SurveyMonkey, I'm talking about. Everything about SurveyMonkey is great. It's a product that totally helps people. It's a good community around it. Everything about it is great. And it wasn't the right job for me. You know, it was like, I'm not going to have very much impact here. I'm just in a sense, a low level grunt. And there needs to be people like that at jobs. But I was like, I'm more entrepreneurial than this. I need to have an impact in my day to day work. I need to leave here and do something on my own. So my only idea at the time was like, double down on CSS Tricks. Like, I'm going to leave here and right. CSS Tricks is growing and I'm just going to double down on that because I love working on it and I still do and all that. So I leave. I just up and leave. And my idea is to just do a better job at CSS Tricks. Make it into a business. Find a way to monetize it better. And I did that in various ways. But while I'm doubling down this, I have a lot more time on my hands to be working on CSS Tricks. What's on CSS Tricks a lot of times is people just want to see code snippets and they want to see demos and stuff. They're looking up, oh, how do I do tabs in jQuery or something? That was like a popular thing at the time. How? Teach me, Chris. How do I do this? And they would Google it and they'd just look at the demo. They'd be like, okay, here's some sample code. This is what I'm trying to extract from you. In the coolest way ever to show code at the time and now is when you're kind of looking at both the code and the example together. And there was existing sites that did this super well, like JS Bin is one of them, JS Fiddle is another one that predate CodePen. And I was like, you know what I should do? I should take all the demos on CSS Tricks and just move them over to one of the two of those apps because they're so nice. This is like, instead of me hand growing my dumb little way to show projects, I should just move them all over there. But I got nervous, as some of us tech nerds do, when you're like, when you go all in on somebody else's platform.
Oh man.
You're like, should I blog? Should I do all my blogging on Medium? You know, nerds are like, you know, it's dangerous. Are they going to shut down? Are they going to change in some fundamental way that you don't like? Are they going to, just there's a million things that can go wrong there. So I was like, I don't feel comfortable doing it. As much as I like y'all, I'm not quite going to do it. So I was like, let's, build our own. So I have my friends, Tim and Alex, and we're all looking to leave SurveyMonkey and do something interesting. This is before we had quite decided to leave. We're like, let's do a weekender where we get together and rebuild one of these type of apps. Like, prior art is all theirs, but we're going to build our own. Maybe we can do a better job. Maybe I can design it better. Maybe it can have better features, all that stuff. So we throw one together, you know, we get it going, and then shortly after that, we're like, this is fun. We like working together. Yeah, man. We like this product, and let's, you know, then Dribbble's already around too, you know, like, I wonder if we can steal from that too, you know? And I even, like, emailed Dan. I was like, hey, I'm going to build a thing, and it's going to kind of be like your thing. He's in a way, just because, like, I don't know, I feel like when you know somebody for a while, you should maybe, like, kind of heads up people on stuff like that, especially when they're very nice people and stuff. And he's like, dude, I didn't invent following people. Like, your thing is totally different, you know?
But it's still the right thing to do. I totally agree with you. when we're getting ready to do something, or like I've had people who are getting ready to put on a certain type of event and they'll use the word camp or summit and they like send me an email and say, hey, we're doing this. I'm like, I didn't invent camps. I didn't invent summits. I appreciate the heads up. Go do your thing. It won't be like my thing.
Right. And it's not, and it never is. And we have a thing, and as close of it to Dribbble as it is, yeah, you can follow other people and you can heart things and comment on things. Like, it's not a totally unique concept. It's just, I just looked up, and still look up to Dan and the Dribbble gang so much that what they just do good stuff. And if we can do anything like they have, it's good. And we both exist to this day and are both, you know, happy, profitable, somewhat thriving-ish businesses. So thanks.
So then you go and you launch CodePen, you invite people into it. Yeah. Like, how long did it take for it to get traction?
Well, we cheated, you know, like I had been blogging and building an audience and making a name for myself as a front-end developer and kind of pundit in the front-end developer world for so many years that when I was time to launch it, I had the perfect audience of people that wanted in. To this day, last week, we have a new feature we're building, and we have like a way to invite people in to certain features, like on a feature-by-feature basis on CodePen. And all I got to do is tweet, and people are like, I want in. Yes, I will happily user test this thing for you for free, you know, not like I'm trying to exploit people, but there's a certain people out there that want in on the early, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's also a big part of community, is there people who want to help. They want to be more than just somebody who's using whatever the system or the community or whatever. They want to actually help, and it's huge for them.
Yeah, and I'm happy to, you know, I asked nothing. I'm just like, hey, if you want in on this thing, I'll add you. And if you have some feedback, let me know, and it will help shape the future of this thing. Just like it happened last week, and I got lots of feedback on that. That's how the launch of it largely was. I'm like, do you want in on this beta? I'm building a thing. You might like it. It's a lot like these other things, but we're going to have this whole social component. I mean, that's the big difference between what we've built and the other people and you know, I guess kind of competitors to us, is that we've like tripled down on the community aspects of CodePen, right? That we're really trying to be like, this is a place where you kind of come and hang out to some degree. And if you're going to build a demo, build it here, because people are going to see it here and interact with it here
and celebrate it. I mean, that's the thing. I see it when it spills over into Twitter, right? And then that's when I'll go in and take a look at something that somebody built. And obviously, I'm not a designer or a developer, front end or otherwise, but I still go in there and start looking at this stuff. So it's like it even brings in that fringe of people who aren't really a fit for the community, but it just seems so positive, and there's like a draw to it.
Yeah, so there's quite a bit of that.
And congratulations, sir.
Thank you. There's still people like me that, like, I can use it now all over CSS Tricks. The original goal of putting all my demos on one of these apps is complete. You know, I absolutely do that all the time. And totally understand if someone else who is a heavy blogger doesn't do that, because it's for the same reason, that they don't control it in the same way. But there's ways around that, and there's, you know, you can use it lightly, you know, and you can back up the things that you do. You can still be on CodePen and not, you know, and not kind of worry that, I don't know, it's all over, you know. You can have a healthy amount of nerd skepticism, and I encourage that.
So how many people are, would you say, members or users? I mean, how many people are part of that CodePen group?
Yeah, that's tricky. That's like your monthly active users is like the startup terminology for it, which I honestly don't even know, because I don't know what the way to calculate it is. And we don't have like investors that care a whole lot about that. And it's funny how different of numbers it is to what the easiest thing is, like, how many people have ever signed up for CodePen? That's just like one database query away. And that number is awesome to me, in that it's much over a million. It's like 1.2 million or something, which is crazy. But our month, the people that are using it, like how many people used CodePen today, is more like many tens of thousands. You know, I think that's safe to share, which is cool, but that number's a lot lower. You know?
But no, but and that was actually what I figured. I figured it was somewhere in the 20 to 50,000 range. Like, that was a guess, just knowing how many front end devs there are, how many people.
And to know that Facebook has like billions of active users. What is that?
They have real? Countries worth of active users.
What?
Yeah. So, and so we've got, like, I just got done consolidating all of these different Slack channels. Every time there was a bureau event, there was a Slack channel that was part of it. And so we ended up with over 30 Slack channels, and it was a disaster because then you'd have some people who went to multiple events that were in multiple channels. And so they would repeat themselves so that everybody would hear it. So I finally got with Slack. I talked with them. I put together a strategy of using private channels and public channels, dividing things up based on the role. We're looking now at location, but we've got over 500 people that have come in there.
And fascinating.
Really, about 400 of them a day are at least looking, and a few hundred a day are talking. And they're helping each other with like what's going on in their business, problems they're having with the team, process queries about like, how do you handle this? How do you do that? But then we got to this point, and you mentioned it earlier. So three of the big things that I get asked for all the time, one is local meetups. And then it's mastermind groups, which I'd never been a part of. I even say it skeptically, but people love them. Funny.
It's a little pinky in the brain.
Mastermind groups. And then a mentorship program, right? But the local meetup thing, I had the first one last week in New York. When I look at where the congregations of bureau community, of where the bureau community is, New York, Austin, Vancouver, Seattle, it's where you would expect it really, right? I mean, it is those kind of tech hub kind of cities. But we had 44 people sign up to be there. We had 28 people show up.
Good. That's like 75% kind of. That's
I felt pretty good. Yeah. And the thing is, I had somebody tell me earlier this year that the difficulty is you're trying to scale intimacy. You're trying to keep these small connected groups together, but you've got more people who want to come into them. And so the reason that I was worried about the local meetups was, okay, so I've got alumni, but then I've got new people who want to come in. And I want them to be there. And in person is so much different than just having somebody show up in a Slack channel, because you see them and you hear their voice and you kind of get a feel for, do I like this person or not, right? It's a, you may still have somebody that you don't really want to hang out with, but at least you've had a better opportunity to connect with them.
Interesting. And I wonder if I'm fascinated because these tend to be people that are owners-ish.
Well, right. It's owners, digital PMs, creative directors, operators. We've got tech leads now, and then we've got QA people that are starting to ask for us to put on events for them.
And so it's really everybody people who have some responsibility of other people. Yeah, you're not.
Yeah.
Right.
Almost always in a management role, though.
Right. Right. So I wonder if you have like less, not that this is, it's a weird way to phrase this, less problems with introversion. That's a sucky way to say it, because I consider myself fairly introverted on that scale. And a lot of times at a tech meetup for CodePen will be kind of overcoming some, you know, shyness, even though shyness and introversion, I realize, are different things. But I wonder if there's a bunch of owners get together that they tend to be a bit more exuberant.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of elevator pitches when you first. It's kind of funny. Digital project managers, they actually pre-organize before the event. So like they start finding out who each other is, who each other are earlier.
Oh, because that's their nature.
That's their nature, right? Operations.
I don't know what I'm going to get in for here.
Exactly, and then they all connect up. But the interesting thing to me, and actually I had I was going to shoot Dan a note as well, is when you start doing these local meetups, the concern I had wasn't so much the people that I know in the community, but I don't know all 4,000 people. And I want to make sure that I don't dilute the brand. Sounds like such a crappy way to say it. But if I'm going to have the bureau, you know, our shield logo, and if we're going to put our name on something, but I can't possibly be at all these things. Like, how did you do it? Did you worry about it? Did you give people access to certain things? I heard that you actually show up, like maybe you're on a video call for the first few minutes of a meetup or something.
Oh, I have done that. In fact, pretty much anyone that asked me, I will try to make it happen. I mean, I don't know that it would work every single time, but I'm glad to do that because it's pretty low commitment, you know, just to hop on a Skype thing and be like, oh, hey, everybody, here's something cool. And at most, thanks. You know, not all of them are ready technologically for that, because some meetups aren't necessarily projecting, or they don't have good enough internet, or who knows what it is. But I think that's, you know, if you ask me, I'll do it. That's probably worth doing for you too, if they want it. Certainly not required. But another thing is, like, I imagine you're not like sending them money. You're not like paying the organizer to organize one, or are you?
No, but we have one of our main sponsors wants to get out in a more local environment.
And sure. So they, it's not like there's no money involved.
But they're willing to pick up the tab. Like they basically picked up a $600 tab at the first one.
Yeah.
So they're willing to do that. Like if it's coffee and bagels, or if it's beer and apps or whatever.
That's exactly what we have. We have a sponsor, Media Temple, that's happy to do that, to be like, if it's just on a per meetup basis kind of thing. If, hey, you know, save your receipts for the beer and pizza or whatever. Or, you know, I know that's the worst two things. Those are the things that people complain about the most, right? You know, make sure you get something for lots of food things and not all alcoholic beverages. So, you know, metaphorical beer and pizza, save the receipt and send it to them. And we send them a bunch of swag, because that's fairly low. You know, that doesn't cost us that much money, but we don't have any money to pay you. And I don't think anybody does. I think that's way too much to ask. And it's ripe for danger too. People throwing a meetup just because they want to make money or something. That's not a good look.
And then there's a whole legal aspect and accounting aspect to that, right? It's like, if suddenly you're paying somebody to manage this, I don't know. It just feels like it starts to get way complicated.
Yeah. Although sometimes you wish you could, because first of all, it feels a little weird to ask anybody to do work on my behalf for nothing. It's weird, right. But you know, they're the ones that emailed in and want to do it. And we're very clear. We have not only do we have email templates that explain our expectations, like what you can expect from us and what we expect from you, and the whole stuff. I mean, it's all kind of templated out, although every single one of these requires a personal touch, of course. It's not like self-serve meetups. But, you know, there's code of conduct stuff that we expect people to share and uphold and that type of thing. But they remember that they really wanted to do this. They have some personal motivation for wanting to do it, and it's usually pretty dang altruistic. Yeah. They just want to have fun with it, and they've seen other people do it. They've seen photos from other meetups or something, and they want to have it in their town. And then I'm always like, absolutely yes. I mean, it couldn't be more flattering. Please, please do it. We'll give you as much support as we can, and we'll be really clear about the expectations of it. I found that over time, one thing that happens then is some locations will have some momentum and some won't, and that's perfectly okay. And that what I worry about these days is people having guilt when there isn't motivation. Like, you don't owe me nothing. You can think it's a one-off. People don't mind one-off events, you know?
No. Well, and so for me, a huge part of it, like, first of all, I'm totally going to follow up and grab those templates. I'll just sign. You know what? I'll just run a CodePen meetup here.
And then you'll know. Yeah.
It'll be fine. And I'll know everything. But we actually, one of the things we have is all these people want to get into our Slack channel, right? And Slack channels are like a big deal now and all this kind of stuff, but you can't come into a Bureau Slack channel unless you've been to a physical event. If you haven't accepted the code of conduct, if you haven't taken the oath not to share things that people would think are confidential, you know, there are these little handshake things that are silly in a way, but then I get worried about accessibility to our events because they're not cheap. I mean, the cheapest event we have is about $1,200. And so there are people who probably need us. And, you know, we've also got a new sponsor who doesn't want to be named that has given us the means to be able to do these scholarships so we can pay for airfare and hotel and get some people there who need the events that we're doing. But for me,
It's not like you're doing nothing then.
No, I mean, we're trying, but even then that's only going to go so far. So for me, and it's funny, I called this scab yesterday. I was like, well, it's all those scabs out there. And somebody's like, what's scab? And I went, it's Slack channel is a business.
I thought you meant somebody is like breaking a.
Yeah, they were breaking the NFL strike. But it's one of these things where it's like, if you don't have that in-person connection sometimes, I think it can be different if you're sharing and you're liking and you're commenting and this type of thing, but if somebody shows up and you don't have that kind of a first touch where you're not like actually commenting on something together, it just feels weird to me. And maybe I just need to get over that. But by having these local meetups, it's an opportunity for people to understand who we are and what we're about, what the Bureau is trying to do, which is basically create spaces in real life as well as online where people can support each other. I mean, that's the core, right? So I just want ways for more people to be able to get in there. And that's been my concern is I can't be at all of these things. You're obviously not at all the CodePen things, but you've got people. I mean, do you know the people when they first reach out, or you're just like, hey, I love that you're you want to do it. Let's do it.
That's probably, I know 60% of them, I'd say.
Okay.
Only because I like make it my business to know people, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, certainly people reach out that I don't know sometimes, and I that doesn't make me hesitant to say yes to them, especially because you can get a pretty good sense of who somebody is, even based on that first email. Like, do they seem like a decent person? And then after five emails, I think you have a pretty good sense. I don't mean like, I don't know. That seems weird to say, because certainly it could go either way, but I think you can get a pretty good when you're planning a very real thing like this, you get a good sense. And we've turned people away. There's been at least one that I can think of where it really seemed like what they were most interested in was the box of swag. And then like looking back on it, I was like, I think they might have been like 10. Because you don't know. Like, you know, it's not like there's like, we don't ask how old you are, you know?
Well, that's hilarious, because I know we had a couple of people reach out to us about taking over their community. And I could tell something was coming with that. I mean, they were part of the Bureau, but they had another community that they were running, and they wanted to bring it in under the Bureau fold. And then it showed up with, well, like, what do you think the value of bringing that in is? So I was like, I what? You want us to pay you?
Oh, you want to sell it? Yeah.
Because 35 people a month show up? I don't know. I can't tell you that. We're not that's not our business. We're not in the business of acquiring other people's communities. So, oh man. Yeah, this is funny. It's so weird to think that I'm sitting here now. I'm sure you get some of that with what you're doing now, but from running a shop to now, I didn't realize we were a product company until recently. I've been trying to run this thing like a service shop. And it was a disaster. I was just trying to make sure everybody was getting everything that they needed and that we were managing it. And, you know, hey, when people bought tickets for things, that was great. But then I realized, oh no, those tickets are the things that allow us to stay here. So it really is about
you. You probably shouldn't lose too much sight of that. It really is like even the Slack community, as much as it's nice that you're letting people talk to each other and you're having them solve problems and build community and all that stuff, it's kind of in service of selling more tickets to the next one.
Absolutely. And that's where it gets kind of crazy. We had recently we had one of the Slack channels for our owners hit the 10,000 limit, and people were starting to wig out. So I exported everything and kept it. But that was a big part of this new channel, was that, you know, once we hit 10,000, we go paid, and everybody agreed that if they didn't go to an event that year, they would take care of a payment.
Is this 10,000? Is that the maximum number of people in a Slack?
No, 10,000 messages. And then it starts to delete the messages on the back end.
I get it. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
There just needs to be, I need to, like, as much as I live in Slack, I feel like there's not enough think pieces on Slack, like how to manage yourself on Slack, how to manage communities on Slack, which I think is like on purpose pseudo neglected from them. Like, you're trying to make it work, but I don't think Slack cares that much, honestly.
No, they don't. People, I mean, they're super nice.
Yeah.
But they're super nice in telling you that, you know what, we're not going after the markets we already have, and you're an edge case. Like, we don't have many people that have 500 plus in there that aren't an enterprise working together. Right. And so it's like, but they're still, I'm in contact with somebody on their support team all the time. And they're super nice about it. So it's, but you're right. It's like when Stuart set that thing up, it was not with the intention of being used by conferences or communities. And I think it was,
and they could change direction right now. Oh yeah. That was a big thing.
That was the first one that I heard about.
which is, they could change direction today and start doing that, and I just don't think they will, because it's not. It feels like, if anything, they're doubling down the other direction and being more useful as a business tool than a community.
Yeah, absolutely. So what else is going on with CodePen? So you've got the meetups going on. You're releasing new features and stuff. Is this it for you? Are you like happy to ride this?
Yeah, in fact, absolutely. You know, I need more time, please. I need more time. And we got more time because we are a profitable company now, and we kind of intend to stay that way, at least for the time being. Thanks. But it's a, you know, that was a big deal because we did take a round of funding at one point, and then you live in the red on purpose, because that's the whole point. You hire people to the point where you're not profitable anymore, aiming at that higher number. And a lot of times all you need to show is growth, and then you can take even more money and stay in the red. And that's a path for some companies, and I get that. But I think we were such nervous wrecks during all those red years or whatever, that being in the black, I think I have the colors correct, right?
You got it right.
That kind of feels good. And what, in a sense, it, as long as we stay there, we have infinite time to work on this thing. And I'm like, oh, does that ever feel good? Because that's the only way I've ever been successful, Carl. The only time I ever is only through attrition. It's not because I've ever had some super genius idea that blew up overnight. I'm not that kind of thinker. I'm not that kind of genius. My success always comes from, I'm in this thing for the long haul. I want to make incremental improvements to things, and I want to feel the effects of those incremental improvements over time. I want to gain people's trust because, not because I promise it or have some legacy or anything, but because we're there day after day doing what we said we're going to do.
You know, I love that. And I think that's the key to success in almost anything. In the way it's been for me, it's like things have to be simple and I have to have support. Like I'm not really good at a lot of complicated stuff, but people know I'm there. And that was the beauty of this new Slack channel, is I can finally communicate with everybody. I had somebody reach out yesterday and say, hey, we're worried about going remote because we don't understand the security implications. And I dropped one question in the Slack channel and had five people reply, detailing out exactly how they manage security. And I was able to just point the person that asked me to that, and she was blown away. And I was just like, that's the whole point, right? It was like such an amazing, and the end of my day was just like feeling like I had achieved all these things when all I really did was connect two people that could help each other, you know?
Yep. So good. That's yet another like Slack think thing, is that there's a lot of people that have Slack fatigue or are trying to figure out how they can handle Slack, and almost a Slack drought. I don't know. At the moment, I'm like, I like the ones that I'm in, but I almost wish I had like my own like super perfect one. I don't want to manage one, but I wish I could craft my perfect Slack with just the people I want to be in. You know? But then I can't be troubled though. You know what I mean?
No. Well, I'll tell you, somebody who went from 37 Slacks down to 2, it is a glorious thing.
Feels good.
Yeah. It is amazing. I no longer feel like somebody's trying to talk to me and thinks I'm ignoring them because I can't find them, you know? And that was legitimately a thing. It's actually one of the things I have with the community as well. I always worry that there's somebody out there trying to connect with me and I just haven't seen the blip, right? So
But
I'm getting over that. I think we've actually got it set up now, so it's pretty easy for everybody to get in touch.
Is there books yet? I feel like, I'm telling you, there needs to be like Slack tricks blog, or like, it's ripe for that. Like, I need help on Slack, people.
I'm going to look into that. We're actually doing one of our first, it's going to be kind of like a Slack fireside chat where we're setting up one channel, inviting everybody into it, and allowing a service provider to actually have an open Q&A, kind of an AMA kind of thing.
Seems perfect for that.
The people in the community. Yeah. And then when it's done, you know, we can take that content and move it to another channel. It's not the easiest, but you know, we'll see how that plays out. Maybe we just leave it there, but I don't want people having that endless scroll either. So you know what? Maybe that's my book. I'm going to write the book on how to manage Slack communities. Thanks, Chris.
Please write it. Because you've just done it from a business perspective, and you know, Now the community perspective, and you had a Slack problem at one point. Maybe you're the perfect person to write this book.
There you go. Well, you know, just like always, when we get together, I realize I'm not doing near enough. Chris, thanks for being on the show so much today, dude. It was so good to hear your voice.
Yep, good to hear from you too, Carl. It's my pleasure. We always have a good time.
And for everybody listening, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a great one.